Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, the internet has dramatically changed the way we talk and especially the way we write. We'll talk to an internet linguist about all the memes, LOLs, and more. But first, Michelle Good joins us now because this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Listener contributions are the largest source of funding here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Your gift keeps the programs you value, including Central Time, on the air. Make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Rob, last hour we heard from 26 donors. Thank you to everyone who gave. This hour we have a new goal of 20 gifts, and we've already got two.
Thanks for getting us off to a great start. That's fantastic. These goals are really important to my ego, sure, but also, and I guess more importantly, they make sure we stay on track for the overall membership drive so we can keep the discussions going strong on the Ideas Network. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
One of the reasons that you enjoy listening to Wisconsin Public Radio is probably because we are commercial free. That means that we count on other sources of funding. State and federal and business sponsors are important, and we do have those. But there is another source of funding that is even more important.
The largest piece of funding for every program you hear is you. Your support makes all the difference. It's the backbone of how things work here. When you give, you keep the quality independent conversations, entertainment, news, information on the air. Make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And because you're special to us, we have a special bonus this drive. We have an exciting drawing for tickets to see Hamilton in Chicago. And it's not just tickets to the show. You also get dinner and a night in a hotel. Now, there's no contribution necessary, but we hope that you will make a contribution. You can see all of the rules at WPR.org/drawing, or better yet, make that contribution and you are automatically entered for a donation of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You might be thinking, I'm just one person. How much difference does my one gift make? Well, a lot, really, because it's your gift and your neighbor's gift and the person across town and a person across the state. Pretty soon, you've got over 50,000 people giving to Wisconsin Public Radio so far, and that really adds up to making the best talk and news in Wisconsin.
That's true. And when you donate, you keep the high quality music, talk, and news available to you and your entire community. Your gift of any amount is added to all those other gifts, and big things happen. Big things like Central Time here on Wisconsin Public Radio. So give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We know you got a lot going on. If you're at work, there's that TPS report cover sheet you have to write and make sure you attach it to the thing. If you're at home, you got that big pot of soup on, you got to give that a stir. We understand you've got something going on. Well, that's the great thing. When you give, it doesn't take a lot of time away from those things. It takes just a few minutes. All we need is your name, your contact info, how much you want to give, and how you'd like to pay.
It is really quick and very easy to do. And your gift right now really helps. So please take a few minutes of your time to support the station and the programs that you count on. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Looking for 18 more gifts by the end of the hour. 18 more people to join in. You make Wisconsin Public Radio possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And don't forget, there's that added bonus, that little something special to push you over the edge for supporting the programs that you love. Your donation enters you in a drawing for tickets to see Hamilton in Chicago. Give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552. And sustainers, if you're already making those ongoing monthly gifts, you're automatically entered.
Get entered into that drawing and support great radio. You count on us for great conversations each and every day. We count on you to help pay for it. You really do make a difference when you give. Do it right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. This is Central Time. Now, for anybody out there who studies language, the internet and everything people write on it has been a game changer. The way we write has been evolving, thanks to emails, blogging, Twitter, and other forms of social media. And for linguists, there's so much data flying around to study. Gretchen McCulloch is an internet linguist. Her new book is called Because Internet, Understanding the New Rules of Language. Gretchen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, with all the communication on the internet, all the words out there, as a linguist, does it feel like, you know, you're at the receiving end of a fire hose?
I think it's fantastic. You know, I can't even go on Twitter to, you know, hang out with my friends without coming across something that's like, maybe I should be analyzing that as well. So there's never a dull moment.
And you write in your book that, okay, we've had for a long time kind of a, when it comes to talking, a formal register, I'm making a fancy speech versus a casual conversation. I'm talking to my buddies. Writing mostly has been on the formal side. We haven't had as much of a casual form of writing that was really, you know, a daily thing. But now we do. Talk about the significance of that.
Yeah, exactly. So the casual form of writing used to be limited to things like letters or diaries or notes on the kitchen table, but a lot of people didn't write on a daily basis. And now you can barely organize a birthday party without sending text messages. And this makes it really interesting because the kinds of things that we expect out of informal language, like conveying tone of voice, conveying emotional nuances, being able to understand sarcasm, are things that we're evolving ways to do in writing.
Right. That's a key point that because this is unfamiliar territory, there's constantly new frontiers here. We're often going in not knowing what the rules are and either inventing them on the fly or trying to fit into what everybody else is doing.
Yeah, exactly. As a linguist, I like to look at language, linguistic rules as an emergent rules. You know, when you go into a forest, no one's maintaining that forest and, you know, carving it up into particular places the way you do with a garden. But the forest still has order. You know, the trees and the grasses and the bushes are all in different spots and they're all in a relationship with each other. And linguistic rules that we do subconsciously also have this kind of order to them, even though they're not the kind of prescriptive rules that a lot of people would think of when they think of language.
And a lot of times when people look at those changing rules or the prescriptive rules and what people actually do, anything new and different, people think of as a bad thing. They're worried about a degradation of the language. Do you look at the internet that way?
Absolutely not. I think the internet is incredibly exciting, and it's easy to project our anxieties about the future or onto how younger people are talking, but it's really interesting, and it's a lot more fun. It's better for your blood pressure to have this attitude of, you know, curiosity and excitement when it comes to linguistic change, because language has always been changing. You know, we don't talk the way Shakespeare did, and in 500 years, people won't talk the way we do. So we can be excited about these historic changes now.
Talking to Gretchen McCulloch, her new book is called Because Internet, Understanding the New Rules of Language. She's a co-host of the Lingthusiasm podcast. We're talking about the way the internet, the ever-evolving internet, is changing the way we write. Gretchen, are there, as we look back at the however many decade history of whatever we want to call the internet in various forms, are there general rules that you see coming up again and again?
One thing that I find is really interesting is that ways of expressing yourself, so punctuation or words that initially meant genuine enthusiasm, eventually take on this connotation of ironic enthusiasm or irony in general. And there's a whole bunch of different ways that happens. You have something like LOL, which starts out meaning laughing out loud, but eventually takes on this sense of aspirational laughter. I wish I was laughing. I acknowledge that was funny, and maybe I should have laughed, but I didn't laugh, but I'm going to pretend I did anyway to make myself seem more polite. But in addition, you have this sense of, okay, well, I didn't actually mean that sincerely. Here's this hint towards a double meaning that I want to add. And that's where LOL is really ending up. But you see this with punctuation. You see this with all sorts of different ways of expression, that enthusiasm gradually gives way to irony, and then you need something new to convey genuine enthusiasm.
And that's one of the big challenges of online communication, and a lot of people have run into this. You and I are talking now. We can tell from our inflection and our tone of voice if I'm saying LOL or LOL. If we're in person, we could see the gestures and the facial expressions. We don't get any of that kind of contextual information. And that seems like one of the big things that drives experimentation when we're typing to each other online.
Exactly. And it's before the internet as well, because there have been people searching for an irony punctuation mark as early as 1575, when a British printer said, maybe we could use a backwards question mark for it. And of course, we know that didn't catch on. And over hundreds of years, people have been saying, well, it would be great if we had a way to, you know, to communicate irony in writing more clearly. But it wasn't till the internet that various ways of doing so really caught on to a large extent.
Yeah. Talk about some of the ways people have tried. Like people often know me in person as a sarcastic person. So I feel like in email, I have to overcompensate and like, I got to put in that exclamation point or they're going to read me negatively or sarcastically.
Right. Exactly. So people often use the single exclamation mark as a way of indicating, you know, genuineness or sincerity or excitement or that kind of, I think of it as that like Walmart smile, you know, like have a nice day, which can be a very sort of pro-social thing to do. And conversely, sometimes people use, for example, asking questions without a question mark as a way of indicating a deadpan or rhetorical question. You know, what could possibly go wrong? But without that question mark can indicate that that's an ironic question. But what's exciting to me is that there's a whole range of ways of communicating irony, because rather than just one single ironic punctuation mark, because if we wanted one single way of making our sentences completely clear, we already have a way of doing that. And it's called not being sarcastic.
We're talking to internet linguist Gretchen McCulloch. Her new book is Because Internet, Understanding the New Rules of Language. And we want to hear from you, exclamation point. Call in at 800-642-1234. Do you write a lot on the internet and social media or texting? Have you noticed a change in the way you write, in the way other people write, in the way younger people communicate that way? Do you see generation gaps in your email, Facebook, Twitter, whatever correspondence? And has the way writing happens on the internet made it in the way you talk out loud? Hashtag IRL. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post non-sarcastically. Now you can be sarcastic if you want, on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation with internet linguist Gretchen McCulloch. Her new book is called Because Internet, Understanding the New Rules of Language. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel comfortable communicating with the other people, typing on texts, Facebook, Twitter, email, whatever? Or do you feel like sometimes you're coming into a conversation and you don't even understand the language people are using at this point? Are you an emoji user or avoider? Do you steer clear of it? What do you see if you're a teacher? Do you see your kids typing differently than they used to could? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll go to a caller now. Marissa is with us in Madison. Marissa, hi.
Thank you.
What did you want to bring up, Marissa?
I've been noticing that people my age, I'm in my 20s, and a lot of my friends, when they use exclamation points, they actually do a space and then an exclamation point. And I've heard that that's a relic of the typewriter era, and that it's no longer necessary. And these are people that I know that a space doesn't go there, so I'm kind of curious how that's becoming a thing on the internet.
Marissa, thanks for the call. Gretchen, have you seen this text space exclamation point?
Yes, I have. A lot of people have been asking about it recently, actually. There's a couple responses that people have when I ask them why they do this. One is, so there are some languages in which the space before the exclamation point is completely standard. In French, this is the classic way of punctuating things. And other people point out that for them in English, using the space before the exclamation point seems to add a layer of softening. So it makes it a little bit less aggressive, perhaps. Or, you know, it adds a sort of additional layer of doing that. And other people say that for them, it's just a typo. You know, when you go back and add a word in before the exclamation part and you just press the space to, you know, make your phone confirm that it's there. Sometimes it's just happenstance. So there's a variety of reasons for this one. But I think the softening meaning may be the one that Marissa's referring to.
Marissa, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Gretchen, a thing that's happened, I think, since the early days of internet forums and chat rooms and things like that is people quickly evolve their own sub-languages or phrases or words catch on. And for a newcomer, it's like an alien sub-language that's hard to fit into. Do you see this happening?
This is not even exclusive to the internet. You know, any group of people that spend a lot of time with each other, whether that's a particular school or particular hobby, a particular geographic area, any group of people that talk more to each other than to others are going to have their in-group ways of talking and their inside jokes. And the internet just makes those a lot more visible because we're used to those in-jokes happening in speech, but we're not as used to seeing them in writing. This is this informal writing increase that we were talking about earlier. So absolutely, it's definitely something that happens on the internet, but it's not exclusive to the internet.
And in your book, Gretchen, you kind of break down different generational groups, depending on when people entered the door of the internet, whether it was the first BBSs to the latest whatever's replacing TikTok at this moment, I don't know. Do you see a generation gap? Is it hard to type across generations?
I think the biggest generation gap that I see is whether people assume that writing has this sort of emotional expressive capacity or completely dismiss it. And, you know, I've had some people, often older, but it's not strictly an age thing, say, you know, how is it that anyone could be assuming I'm being passive aggressive to them? It's never even occurred to me to be passive aggressive in a text message. How is this even possible? And other people saying, but of course there's passive aggression here. I can't help but read this tone into it. So I think it's a big question of, you know, how much do you assume that writing is capable of a fully expanded emotional repertoire? And then when you assume that it's possible, you end up doing it and inferring in other people.
Well, let's talk then about the rise of emojis, in part to try to answer that question, these little, hopefully emotion conveying mini images. How did those come to be?
Well, emoji got their start in Japan in the 90s as a replacement for sending large pictures back and forth, because I don't know if you remember the 90s, but our capacity for sending picture messages was pretty limited at the time.
Loading.
Yeah. 5 minutes later, oh, look, you know, half the picture's there. A lot of Japanese cell phone carriers, Docomo, SoftBank, several others, decided to encode certain common pictures as if they were letters. So when you send the letter A to someone, you're not sending a picture to the letter A, you're just sending one code point that tells the other person's phone to make that. And it's much tinier, and so it loads really fast. And emoji are the same thing. They're like letters, the way the computer treats them. But when we see them, we see shapes and images and faces and things instead. Though they got eventually added to the general Unicode set that all of our phones and computers use and spread around the world.
As we wrap up, Gretchen, you're very brave because you've written a book about a moving target with things changing all the time. What are you watching now? What is an emerging trend that you have your eye on?
One thing that I'm really interested in is the expansion of video, and especially short form video, things like TikTok, Instagram stories, which came from Snapchat stories. And those were still developing as I was writing the book. You know, we had Vine at the time, and I did mention Vine in the book, but it wasn't quite as big of a genre. So I'd be really interested to see where we end up going with short form online video in the next few years.
Gretchen, thanks for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's internet linguist Gretchen McCulloch. We talked with her about her new book. It's called Because Internet, Understanding the New Rules of Language. Coming up, a major source of news for Native Americans in Wisconsin and beyond is closing up shop. We'll talk to the founder of News from Indian Country about why it's ending publication and what its absence will mean for Native American communities. First is the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Michelle Good is with me. You count on the Ideas Network for interesting conversations. We count on you to help keep these discussions on the air.
And listener support is the largest piece of the funding that makes this show and all the others that you enjoy possible. That's why your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, it's so very important.
Looking for 16 more pledges now in the next half hour or so. Make your gift to support the programs you enjoy and rely on every day.
WPR programs are listener supported. And in that last segment, we learned more about how the internet is influencing our language. If that is the kind of informational topic, fun topic that you count on every day here from Central Time, show your support right now.
Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We heard from Stan in Mineral Point. Stan says, thank you, Central Time, for having the pulse of Wisconsin, the nation, and our world.
Nice, Stan.
Stan, that is very nice. Thank you so much for giving and the kind words, Stan. How about you? Do you stan Central Time? Make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we've been talking a lot about becoming a sustainer this drive. When you make ongoing monthly contributions from your bank account or credit card, there's a nice benefit to that, apart from having peace of mind during pledge drives, not having to worry about if you've pledged or not, made that donation. You are automatically entered for every single drawing that we have.
And this could be your lucky drive. We have a drawing for tickets to see Hamilton. That's the musical, not just like a guy named Hamilton.
I
tried to pitch that as a cheaper way to, but
oh,
no, they didn't go for the here we go for the real thing here. Now you can start your ongoing monthly gift today and get entered in that drawing and all future drawings when you become a sustainer at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
16 more donations we are looking for in this before this hour is up. We can do it. We can do it, but only with your help. So please make that donation now to keep this program and all of your favorites here on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's very easy. You be entered in that drawing for the Hamilton tickets, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And let me throw a travel mug at you. Not literally, but
don't.
Figuratively. I won't do that. But if you pledge $20 a month or more, you can ask for the new Wisconsin Public Radio 16-ounce stainless steel travel mug with a cool WPR-inspired design. Yours when you give $20 a month or more. Ask for it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Make that donation, show your support, cast your vote for Central Time and all the great programs here on WPR.
Thank you so much for your support of Central Time and the Ideas Network. Make that gift now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thank you. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. After 33 years, a Native American news outlet based in northern Wisconsin is shutting down. We'll look at what the loss of news from Indian Country means for the Native American communities it served. First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Rob Ferret here with Michelle Good. Listener contributions are the biggest source of funding here at WPR. Your gift keeps the programs that you value, programs like Central Time,
hopefully,
on the air. Make your contribution now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
25 minutes left to go, and we've got 14 more donations to get before that time. When you give, you fund Central Time and all of the other WPR programs that you count on. So please give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We heard from Shay in Fremont. Shay says, donating because I want the Hamilton tickets.
Honesty.
And of course, I'm grateful for Central Time. Independent reporting is vital in these times and at all times. Thank you, Shay. Hamilton tickets? What's that all about?
Well, we're giving away Hamilton tickets for every person who makes a donation.
So we'll be entered into a drawing.
We'll be entered into a drawing.
Not
yes,
everybody makes
no,
a donation.
You don't all get tickets.
Let's be clear on this.
We'd have a lot of Hamilton tickets on our hands. Sell out the whole theater. No, you are entered in a drawing for a pair of Hamilton tickets plus dinner out and a night in a hotel in Chicago. It's a great package, and it's our way of saying thank you. Thank you for making your donation. Thank you for being a listener. You don't have to make a donation to be entered in the drawing, but we'd sure like it if you would. 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.
I mean, you've got a theater background, Michelle. You and I could do like a live two-person show rendition of Hamilton. I haven't seen it myself or read it or anything, but I feel like I get the gist.
Yeah.
And I could like rap.
Yeah, you
like,
can definitely
there's Aaron
rap.
Burr's in it, right? Yeah, I could talk about him.
Yeah.
I've read a book about him one time.
Oh, we've got it. We've got it down. Let's forget the tickets and it'll just be the Rob and Michelle Hamilton show.
But in the meantime, your pledge gets you entered into a drawing for the real Hamilton. And that's just, of course, one extra bonus reason to pledge. The main reason is that the Ideas Network is your station. You come here for discussions about ideas. It's in the name, whether it's an interesting little nugget or something big that could change history.
Your whole day can be changed by something that you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio. That's the power of great radio programs like this one right here. And that's the power of your support.
This fall member drive is your opportunity to be a part of the radio service that you and thousands of other people rely on. Make a difference. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, you're already a part of the community of Wisconsin Public Radio listeners, whether you've been listening for years or just a few months. Now you have the opportunity to become part of our community of members. That's people who support the programs that they value.
If you've never given before, try starting with a gift of $120, or better yet, make that an ongoing gift of $10 a month. Your contribution of any amount makes you a member, and because it's the largest piece of our funding, you'll really make a difference. It starts with a gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Take your favorite beverage on the go with a new WPR travel mug. What beverage will you take with you?
I've put iced tea in travel mugs. I put water in travel mugs. Travel mugs are not only for coffee. I'm just putting it out there.
I would primarily drink coffee out of this. Good, strong coffee. Dark roast, as Mother Nature intended coffee to be.
I would use this every day for my decaf and possibly my iced decaf.
Ask for your travel mug today when you give $20 a month or more. Here's how.
Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on and maybe get that mug. Rob Ferret here with Michelle Good. Your support of Wisconsin Public Radio today keeps the programs you enjoy going strong. Whatever amount you give, we really do appreciate and count on your gift.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. If you have already renewed or if you make ongoing monthly gifts as a sustainer, thank you so much. Because listeners who renew and monthly sustainers, they're the backbone of WPR.
If you haven't given yet, join thousands of other WPR members by donating at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, we always tell you that you should make a donation for the amount that is right for you. And really, you're the judge of that. It's your money. But we do have a little formula. Maybe it'll help you figure out what would be best for you. Let's say you hear three things every day that you're really glad you hear. You learn something from them. If you paid a dime for each one of those, that would work out to $10 a month. And if that math works for you, then make a gift of $10 a month right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can do your own math on this, but there's a simple equation. Information and conversation comes out the radio to you, and money comes from you to help pay for it, and we really count on gifts from people just like you. Make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and thank you. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Since 1986, news from Indian Country has served Native American communities from its base in northern Wisconsin. According to editor and CEO Paul DeMain, the publication has covered topics including iron workers, spearfishing, casinos, federal recognition, hemp, taxes, treaty rights, boarding schools, corruption, and many others. But after 33 years, DeMain announced that the August 2019 issue would be the news source's last. In a letter on the outlet's website, he called the run, quote, a wild, wise, and wonderful ride. Paul DeMain joins us now from Hayward. Paul, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, and please, people listening in, make your pledge to keep the news on the air.
Paul,
it helps.
Thank you. That's very nice of you to say. Well, I want to start by saying, I guess, condolences. I mean, you've put your heart and soul into this for three decades. How are you feeling now that it's over?
Well, it's not quite over yet. Certain parts of it are over, but I'm going through what is going to be about 45 years of writing materials. I started writing about American Indians and other issues when I was in high school at Wausau West High School and 16 years old and editor of, I think they called it the Clarion at the time. And I tend to be a pack rat on source documents and information. So I'm actually discovering repositories of information that are very valuable. So I want to spend some time in the next year or 4 months going through that and sorting out. I mean, I've got collections of reel-to-reels that people gave me because they thought I could find something to do with them at the time. And they're even out more moded even more than they were at the time when I received them. VHS, DAT tapes, cassette tapes. And, you know, I had this wonderful privilege of speaking to people and speaking to issues and learning about issues across North America. Actually, the Western Hemisphere is what we covered, indigenous affairs from the Maori all the way up to the establishment of Nunavut as another province in Canada. So we've covered everything, but I've had a privilege to sit down and interview leaders that have passed on, like Oneida Percy Paulus and Hillary Walkaw, the Menominee, and so many more people whose information and source documentation is underutilized and on a disk somewhere where it needs to be made public. So I'm going to spend some time trying to archive and inventory and see where some of these materials ought to go. So it's really kind of fascinating running through it. We've got something like 10,000 photos laying around our office, and we've got to figure out where some of that stuff goes here in the next few weeks and months.
Now, how would you describe News from Indian Country's mission over the last 30-plus years?
Well, I think it was kind of formulated probably in 1973 when I was in high school and I was reading articles produced by the Associated Press, for example, about the Wounded Knee takeover and Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, and another publication produced by Mohawk people out in New York called Akwesasne Notes. In Akwesasne Notes, you'd have 4 or 5 pages of information, materials. They talked about treaty rights. They talked about grievances. They talked about the lack of jobs, the lack of education, and all these other issues that help raise to the issue in the occupation of Wounded Knee, South Dakota, in a very symbolic event in 1973, covered worldwide during, I think, 72 days of occupation of that little hamlet. And then looking at the Associated Press, which, you know, kind of reflected a situation in which violent protesters had invaded this village and taken it over, and how short and sweet the facts are. And they were the facts, you know, who, where, what, when, and why kind of a thing. But they lacked, I think, the integrity of background and sourcing and history. And so I think it was as early as high school that I said, you know, if I ever have a chance to own my own newspaper, that's what I want to do. And I want to give voice to the indigenous community so it's their voice that's being projected, and not a 5 to 10 second clip on television or a short radio interview or some kind. Like we're going to be on for 15 minutes. I'm not going to be able to explain a whole lot of things during that time period. So I wanted to expand on the capability so that people had a better understanding of indigenous affairs and native history that comes from their own backyard.
In the run of News from Indian Country, there were some stories, a lot of coverage, looked at positive things and community building within Native groups and among Native groups. But you also tried to hold tribal governments' feet to the fire. You covered stories of corruption. Talk about that balancing act where you're trying to reflect the positive but not overlook the bad stuff.
No, I think we wanted to sit back and look at those basic covenants of journalism, and that is to try to be fair and balanced and give people a chance to discuss things and allow the public to formulate their position. But certainly, we were not afraid to deal with our own laundry in our backyard. So we did articles about tribal leaders involved in drugs and drug dealing, embezzlements, all the things that impair society in a regular way. We weren't afraid to hang out our own laundry. In fact, I like the idea that it was indigenous people holding other indigenous people accountable. yes, we discussed mascot issues as a national issue. Yes, we've covered the revival of languages as an issue, and it's in all its depth and revival and what it represents. We've done beautiful stories about people doing beautiful things, but we also dug into the dirt of the community. We had to cover trials for people on murder, embezzlement, drug dealing, and some of those people were public leaders, and it didn't always make people happy. So I says we had something for everyone. We had good, bad, and ugly in our publication, but it's simply a reflection of the Indigenous community, as is any community. Probably one of the most startling cases that we worked with in depth with Richard LaCourse, a Yakima native who used to work with the William Randolph Hearst newspaper in San Francisco, and a couple of other native journalists took on a review of the Leonard Peltier case. And we went into it after many, many years of support, all five or six of us, believing that Leonard Peltier might have been railroaded and framed, only to end up interviewing some women, which Peltier had bragged to about shooting the agents. And one of the women in that group ended up being executed within 6 months of that event. We have since tied her murder to the suppression of evidence in the shooting of the two FBI agents. In fact, the fact that she was a recipient of Peltier bragging to her. When I first heard that, and the first time I heard that specifically was in an interview with Denver with one of the women Peltier had bragged to, I went down the highway and pulled over, and I just asked the question, why me? Why me? And I said, okay, I had to think about it for a while, about what this all meant, because I knew that it would make me someone in the tribal community that was looked down upon by some people who had pledged their political lives, their social lives, to trying to free this guy. So it was a difficult case, but the pursuit of the truth in this matter was what we were looking at, and I think that's what we achieved.
Talking to Paul DeMaine, Managing Editor and CEO of News from Indian Country, which has published its last edition after over 30 years. Paul, out on the landscape, are there other Indian Native American news sources that you're watching, that you look to?
Well, I'm looking at the Indian Country TV, Indian Country Media Network, which is the old Indian Country Today publication, which quit publishing newsprint several years ago, went to an online digital format, and is now housed out of the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism in Arizona. And they're trying to revive and work with digitalization and video to save themselves. I mean, we've lost in Indian Country. 20 years ago, we had 700 publications. We probably got 150, 180 left. Many of those are public relations type news publications. And so you're going to get a lot of good news. You're going to get political perspectives from some of them. But the other thing is with the digital age comes all kinds of voices. You can look and see people posting stuff that's factual news. Takes a little bit of work sometimes to figure out and vet that news for accuracy and everything, but I think that'll evolve. But it was really the internet that changed the dynamic of news from Indian Country, and we've lost more than 60% of those publications that were in Indian Country as either private or tribal private enterprises of some kind.
So for the reasons for closing now, it sounds like you're going through the same issues that many newspapers have gone through over the last 10 or 15 years, as you mentioned, in part because of the internet.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's part of it. And part of it is after 40 some years of covering Indian Country, I thought maybe I wanted to do something else and get out of that news grind. Some people live it until the very end. I've been involved in so many activities and seen so many things in Indian Country. I've covered the food sovereignty movement. I really enjoy it. I tap trees myself. I just got done inoculating some oak trees with mushroom spawn this morning on the property I own. So there's plenty to do. There's plenty of opportunities to produce maybe a video podcast or something in the future, but I just want to take some time off after this and think about doing something different. I think I'm tired of the pursuit of trying to change from the old publishing format into the digitized format. It's time for someone younger to come along. We gave voice to some 400 or more writers over the years And I'm very proud of the fact that we had at one point 17 employees. I've graduated some of those employees from the original 418K Macintosh computer into a computer world, and they've gone off and made a living. And those are the real important things, you know, to be able to see someone who's come and gone and is thriving in the community. We created jobs. We created economic stimulus. We gave hope to people. And so I think we've accomplished a lot, but it's time to do something different.
Well, Paul, thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you much. Appreciate it as well.
That's Paul DeMaine, Managing Editor and CEO of News from Indian Country, which recently announced it's ending publication after over 30 years. We talked to him about the news outlet's role in Native American communities. Coming up, a mathematician says we can improve our lives if we live more mathematically, and it's more fun than it sounds. We'll find out how. Right now, Michelle Good is in the studio with me for the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Your gift right now is so important. It's because gifts from people like you are the biggest piece of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio programs. Invest now in your future listening at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Rob, we are getting closer to our goal. We need eight more donations in the next about 8 minutes or so. So if you make that call, if you value this program, make the call. And thank you so much if you've already given.
If you haven't, give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Just had that conversation with Paul DeMaine. We've had him on the show many times before. He's with News from Indian Country, just folded, but we've had him on to talk about issues related to Native Americans in Wisconsin and around the country, and as he said, around the hemisphere. It's an example of the kind of Wisconsin-focused conversations we have. The communities we bring in to talk about what's going on in their part of the world. If you appreciate these kind of conversations, make a gift right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And your support is so important because WPR is listener supported. That means that your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, it makes the topics that you tune in for every day, it makes them possible. So choose an amount that works for you and make that gift.
Get the new stylish and practical WPR travel mug. The hot beverage stays hot. The cold stays cold with this 16-ounce travel mug. Support the programs you value. Show off your WPR pride. Starts with your gift of $20 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Public radio gives people opportunities to hear programming that they can't hear anywhere else. My greatest fear as a driver is that I'll run out of a zone where there's a public radio station, and then I have to revert to something else. But I keep coming back because of the variety. My name is Penny, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for programming I can't get anywhere else.
Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Michelle Good. Your support, listener support, is the biggest source of funding for Central Time and all your other favorite programs. That's why your gift is super important. Make a gift of $10 a month or $100 a month. Whatever works for you, whatever amount you choose, is the right amount to give.
That's right. And our world gets more complicated every day. So you rely on Wisconsin Public Radio to turn those complicated issues and the news of the day into things you can understand. That way you know how it'll affect you.
For you to get programs that are relevant to your life, we rely on your financial support. It's the largest source of our funding. That's why we ask that if you've never given before, make your first ever gift right now. Maybe $10 a month during this fall member drive at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And think about the money that you spend every day on things that aren't really necessary. Things like, well, coffee is necessary. Yeah. Lunch out.
Yeah, sometimes.
Not necessarily. Well, that can add up to a few dollars every day. It's easy to spend that kind of money on something that's just part of a daily routine.
Wisconsin Public Radio is part of your daily routine, too. It's It's your daily news source, your conversation starter, your place to learn. So spend some money on that. Spend some money on Wisconsin Public Radio. Start maybe with $1 a day. That's about $30 a month. Do it right now. You can give at WPR.org. Takes just a few minutes online there. Or call 888-202-2552. Join the many people who support Wisconsin Public Radio looking for just 6 more members, new or returning, this hour. Make your gift right now. You will be glad that you did. We're midway through this fall membership drive looking for your support right now. Make your very important gift to Wisconsin Public Radio and get entered into a drawing for a pair of Hamilton tickets in Chicago.
Hamilton tickets, we also have the added incentive of $10 a month. You get this great travel mug with a new geometric design.
That's
on
$20
it.
A month, Michelle.
Is it
$20? Don't want to mislead people today.
I'm all over the place. Free Hamilton tickets for everyone.
No.
No.
Not a thing.
A beautiful mug, $20 a month, or your donation of $240 for a one-time. Show your support for this program and all the great programs that you love. 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.
We heard from Thomas and Mary in Paradise, Michigan. They say WPR is our connection to home, even when we're sailing, parentheses, reception allowing. Well, great. That's great. I'm glad to think. I think of myself in people's cars all the time, right?
Yeah.
I'm kind of talking to you. I'm in the passenger seat. You know, not really.
Which is a little creepy.
A little creepy, but I'm not really there. But now I get to pretend I'm on a boat, too.
That's pretty cool.
That's good. I'm going to do that for a while. Thanks, Thomas and Mary, for giving me that option. And thank you so much for listening and for giving. How about you join Thomas and Mary, whether you're in a boat or not? Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Bear with me. I get a little motion sickness sometimes. I just get a little queasy. It's not so bad, though.
And when you make that donation, consider becoming a sustainer. It's quick, it's easy, and you don't have to think about it. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Keep pledging into the news break. You can help us hit our goal. WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and thanks.